Kia ora. Welcome to episode 43 of the SWNZ podcast, the podcast for New Zealand Star Wars fans. My name is Matt.
And my name is Christy.
A lot of news to round up this week, so let's talk Star Wars. First on the list, a quick note about Auckland Armageddon Expo. It has now officially been bumped from the October date to the November backup date that they had previously mentioned, but it hadn't been locked in. This is just to ensure that people can plan ahead with a bit of decent, solid foreknowledge, because it's not 100% clear how the lockdown decreases are going to pan out in Auckland. So the new dates for Auckland Armageddon Expo: Friday the 26th of November through to Sunday the 28th of November, and slightly different timings because this is over a two-day weekend instead of a three-day long weekend. Friday is 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. That's the same as previous Friday preview nights. But Saturday is going to be a 12-hour day from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. to make up for time. And Sunday is going to be 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. At this point, we don't know of any confirmed Star Wars guests for the event. But there is always a good Star Wars flavor to Armageddon Expos, and we enjoy it and talk about it on that basis.
I'm glad that they made this formal change. It gives fans time to prepare. I know people do travel from around the country, and obviously in our current lockdown status, traveling between city centres and things like that is not really possible. So this bumps it out to kind of give us that little bit of extra time in case we spend a little bit more time at Extra 2, because we do need to be at level 1 to hold Armageddon. So I'm looking forward to it. Obviously this is a little bit different, not being in the classic Labour weekend.
They mentioned this is the second only time, I think 2011 for the Rugby World Cup was the only previous time it hasn't been on a Labour weekend, so mildly interesting in that regard. But yeah, November dates, we can live with that.
Yeah, this will be possibly a little closer to obviously Star Wars releasing. It would be kind of fun if they managed to get Temuera as like a virtual guest or in-person guest, as obviously the hype for the Book of Boba Fett is going to be building by the time we get to the end of November, or if it hasn't already come out yet.
It'll be just weeks away from the release, basically.
Yeah.
4 weeks tops.
So that could be, like, you know, fingers crossed, interesting. But in any case, I'm still looking forward to it, and yeah. It's good to know that they're planning ahead so that we don't have the unfortunate scenario of building up, and then having it being cancelled at the last minute.
So just thinking of Boba Fett and the Book of Boba Fett, there's two other Boba Fett-related news items I just want to mention. November the 12th is being billed as Disney Plus Day, where a whole lot of new content is coming out. But something new that has just been mentioned and confirmed on the D23.com website is that there will be a single special Boba Fett episode coming out on that day. Probably a sort of a catch-up backstory for Boba Fett. Not a in-world episode, but sort of a real-world look at Boba Fett and his development over the past years, and just sort of a catch-up to his backstory, his relationship to Mandalorian culture and so forth. I suspect as a prep for the Book of Boba Fett and subsequent material that involves him.
Yeah, I estimate this will sort of touch on the likes of the holiday special animated short, where we get sort of the first look, adding into maybe the special edition or looks at the prototype armor, going through
I hope they do cover some of that real world backstory.
Yeah.
It may just be a little bit of a character primer as well, or really focusing on that for people who aren't quite as familiar with this whole story.
Yeah, because within the movies and the animated series, it doesn't give us the full breadth of why this character is so loved. Looking at it from sort of an outsider perspective, he doesn't have a large dialogue, not large action roles within the original trilogy.
No, and you have to be familiar with quite a lot of content, yes. EU content, to really, really appreciate this whole story. And to really be familiar with what is current canon and what is old story.
Yeah, particularly because we went into The Mandalorian not really needing too much backstory. This was a completely original character, but the Book of Boba Fett, it's probably going to do best to just launch straight into it rather than trying to explain to the audience who he is, what his life has been like. So if they catch up, it's like, okay, he's Jango Fett's son/clone, and cover all of that, talk about the popularity within the fandom. Certainly, like touching on the merchandising would be interesting, because he's always really heavily featured in merchandising despite not being on screen for quite as long as other characters like Darth Vader
and stuff.
Yeah,
I'd love to see some of that conversation. Yeah, I mean, and it's an interesting thing, because it's we're obviously, and all our listeners obviously are almost certainly a long-standing Star Wars fans, but a lot of upcoming Disney Plus content is about engaging new fans and new generations of fans, people who might not be as familiar with older content. So we've always got to keep that in mind when we're thinking about Disney Plus content and who it's targeted for as well. It's always a tricky balance between catering to new fans and catering to old fans and expanding the fan base and expanding the audience. We don't know a lot more about this Boba Fett special episode. It's described as a special celebrating the origins and legacy of Star Wars' legendary bounty hunter Boba Fett. That's the official synopsis, and that's all the information we have at this point. Presuming somewhere around an hour, you know, 45 to just over an hour minutes duration, but we'll hopefully hear a little bit more about that. That's coming out on November the 12th on Disney Plus. Now, just still in the rumor category, because it hasn't been confirmed beyond a single report at this point, but the scoring sessions for the Book of Boba Fett have apparently already begun. And interestingly, Ludwig Göransson, who is the composer for the Mandalorian theme and Mandalorian music, is going to be behind the music for the Book of Boba Fett. It's been reported that he's started work on the actual recording sessions for the Book of Boba Fett. And from what I've seen online, everyone that has heard this information is quite excited and keen about it, as we personally are, I think. It's going to continue the flavor. Music is a really key element of Star Wars content in general, and we'll talk about that a little bit down the line in this episode when we talk about Star Wars Visions, because I've got a few thoughts on that specifically. So it'll be really nice to have that connection between the Book of Boba Fett and The Mandalorian, with music coming from Ludwig Göransson.
Particularly since the Book of Boba Fett is a bit of an offshoot, a spin-off, as it were, from The Mandalorian. It makes sense to have a similar vibe. It would make, like, I wouldn't be surprised if they just tap his talent to do other Star Wars shows, but it makes a lot of sense to keep that sort of similar feel. We know that he wrote specific music for sort of Boba Fett scenes, so he's already got sort of a feel and a flavor, and I think it kind of fits because, yeah, they're both bounty hunters, both Mandalorians, you know, it kind of fits with that sort of spin-off, and I'm excited to hear this. Like you say, music has can drastically change the way things feel, and I'm really hoping this one is true, that this isn't just somebody just throwing something out there to get the clicks.
I think it's reasonable to, it's not a high clickbaity type concept, really, compared to some of the story plotline leaks or rumors that you get out there. So I think it's probably reasonable. And the other thing just to remember is, of course, that Ludwig Göransson's received 2 Emmy Awards for his work on The Mandalorian so far. So as well as being a fan favorite, he has received critical acclaim and acknowledgement for his work on Star Wars content.
Yeah, even if it's just nominations, it always looks good if a series can advertise that they are Emmy nominated, and certainly winning Emmy awards looks even better. So if you know something works, you know, don't change it, keep going. So I can totally see that winning Emmy awards is going to be a big nod, along with the fan love of the music style for The Mandalorian. So
yeah, I mean, they may really be sort of, you know, loading the weaponry to stack things up for further Emmy awards for further Star Wars Disney Plus content.
Yeah.
Now, in today's podcast, when we get through a little bit of these other news items, we're going to be going a little bit deeper into talking about Star Wars Visions, which came out on Disney Plus on Wednesday during the past week. But there's a couple of things I just want to talk about in advance of that. So no spoilers in this current conversation about Visions, but we will talk about the episodes in detail later on. I want to talk about an interview with the producers where a brief notion of Season 2 cropped up. There was an interview on CNET.com with producer Kanako Shirasaki and executive producer James Waugh, where there was a little bit of a conversation about canonicity of Visions and a potential for Season 2. So let's look at a couple of those comments just briefly. The comments came up, I think, mostly from James Waugh, the executive producer, and he said, so are there plans, in response to the question, are there plans to integrate Visions into the timeline saga storytelling? The response was, not currently, but I have no doubt that we will see things that were in Visions become part of the fabric of Star Wars over the next decades. Now, we knew that Visions wasn't going to be canon, that developers, that the content creators had free rein in terms of how to interpret their vision of Star Wars. So we knew that it wasn't going to be solidly canon, but it's interesting to note that it may be drawn on as a resource in the future, I think, in some ways. And the other thing that really caught people's attention, because I think it's on the minds of many who have watched their way through the first season of Visions, is, are we going to get more from the same studios or more from other studios? Either way, I think it would be great. And James Waugh on that topic said, I think we would love to do more Star Wars Visions. We'll have access to the reaction and what the fandom wants. Kanako and I are probably incredibly biased, but we love these shorts and really do think that this is such a great framing for Star Wars.
Like most TV series, you generally want to gauge consumer reaction to it before signing on for a season two and sort of committing to all that sort of time and resources. But judging by the initial reaction, I think this could mean that we if the producers and that are very much on board, and if Disney Plus, they'll have the viewership numbers from the episodes just launched, I wouldn't be surprised if we get an announcement saying that, yep, they're going to sort of green light a second season and sort of expand on this.
One interesting thing about this content is that there's so many different studios involved. So you can create an entire season with different groups working in parallel. So an entire season only takes a little bit over the duration to create a single episode in some ways, because everyone's doing the same work at the same time rather than doing each episode back to back. So season two could be quite a straightforward decision in some ways. Now, one last thing just on the general topic of Star Wars Visions. When the episodes dropped, this wasn't available immediately, but subsequent to that, if you click on the Extras tab in Disney Plus, you'll see that there is a behind-the-scenes episode, they're calling them Filmmaker Focus, a behind-the-scenes episode for each of the Star Wars Vision episodes available through Disney Plus under the Extras tab. These are 6 to 8 minutes each, behind-the-scenes look for each episode, but also an Origins episode that talks about the Visions series in its entirety so far. Worth checking those out. Well, one little bit of news that we just noticed in the last day or so relates to Star Wars tabletop gaming, Star Wars miniature gaming. Atomic Mass Games, we've talked about a number of times in the past, are the current developers of the X-Wing and Legion and Armada tabletop games. They're owned by a company called Asmodee, which is owned by an investment firm called PAI Partners. And it's come out that it looks like the investment firm owners, PAI Partners, is looking to sell Asmodee. And there's a little bit of trepidation amongst fans as to what this might mean. It's not a great feeling that a developer of Star Wars material, Star Wars product, is owned by an investment partner, because they're generally more focusing on money, profit, than, you know, fan reaction. Fan reaction is just a vehicle for profit in some ways. So there's a little bit of trepidation as what this potential sale, this potential handover between different investment companies of this very large gaming company, you know, what the impact will be for Star Wars gaming. So we'll see how that pans out. If watching Star Wars Visions has just given you a craving for more Star Wars content, you know, any and all Star Wars content, there's a few things that have shown up on YouTube over the last little while that are just worth checking out if you just want things to watch and fill in the time that are Star Wars themed. We've talked about the upcoming Lego Star Wars Terrifying Tales episode that will be screening in October related to Halloween. But also on the topic of Halloween, Lego Star Wars, the official Lego Star Wars YouTube channel, have released a small bundle of videos that they're calling Celebrate the Season. These are all Lego Star Wars style clips that in entirety amass to about nearly 8 minutes worth of content, just using the Lego Star Wars characters and the Lego Star Wars theme to tell slightly Halloween-themed stories. So the titles for those are Ghost Ship, Carving Up the Competition, Trick or Treat, Scary Starship, and The Pumpkin Batch. So as you can see, there's a bit of a Halloween theme there, and we'll put a link to the playlist and to the compilation video down below or on the SWNZ page for this podcast if you're just looking for more Star Wars content of any sort, just because you love consuming all aspects of Star Wars content, check that out. And if you're more interested in the stuff that is tied to canon, as a consequence of winning an Emmy Award for visual effects, Industrial Light and Magic, their official YouTube channel, has just today put out a quite cool video that takes a look behind the scenes at the Emmy-winning special visual effects of The Mandalorian Season 2. There's also coverage of it on StarWars.com, where they say today Industrial Light and Magic is celebrating the Emmy winning a groundbreaking visual effects of The Mandalorian Season 2 with a special look behind the scenes. So a fun behind the scenes look at The Mandalorian from Industrial Light and Magic up on YouTube. And just to round out the YouTube conversation, on the SWNZ YouTube channel, we have got out another video on unique New Zealand Star Wars collectibles. If you're interested in the 1984 Kellogg's Corn Flakes Star Wars stickers, Return of the Jedi stickers, check out the SWNZ YouTube channel for a look at that collectible and the packaging and the competition and promotions associated with that. All right, product announcements and store reports. Denuvo Novo is the company that has taken over from Innovos in terms of producing high-end Star Wars costume and armor components. They're owned by Rubies, who is owned by NECA. And when they took over, basically, slightly more complicated than that, but effectively they took over from Innovos in terms of producing the Innovos development materials. Subsequent to that, it looks like they are actually starting to really get through the backlog of Innovos orders and Innovos products. People are actually receiving things in hand and they're getting decent communication from this new company about the status of their orders, whether it's in development or whether or not there are dates associated with that. And so it is worth talking about what sort of products they might have coming up, because they can ship to New Zealand. They've reported that in addition to the small bundle of helmets that they started with, they relaunched with, they have new costume components coming out, including a Elite Praetorian Guard helmet, a Han Solo ensemble, is a New Hope version of shirts, pants, and vest and belt, Imperial Officer belt and buckle, Han Solo belt buckle by itself, a Rogue One AT ACT driver helmet, and a Han Solo Force Awakens jacket. So some very cool costume components that aren't really being developed necessarily by other costume and apparel manufacturers, licensed manufacturers. Also fun to know that there are 5 X-Wing helmets lined up for next year and beyond. Luke, Blue Leader, General Merrick, Gold Leader, Red Leader from A New Hope, and Rey's salvaged helmet from The Force Awakens.
I'm really glad to see this range of product coming out. I was a little worried that this new company would basically fulfill outstanding Innovus orders and then focus on the kind of easy to mass produce on a long-term basis like helmets. One thing that always made Innovus stand out to me was they did very good quality soft goods. They did the robes, the jackets, all the sort of things that...
And some of that did get into consumers to customers' hands, didn't it?
Yes. You know, if you really love Kylo Ren, but you're not great at sewing, you don't want to source the very specific material for, you know, a high price, you could get a very accurate fabric top to bottom. They obviously didn't often do shoes because that tended to be a different licensed category. And a fair amount of Star Wars shoes are actually off-the-shelf items, and obviously you can't copy something that's made by another company. But this is a good step. It's showing me that they are continuing on with the Innovus sort of legacy by doing things like a Han Solo outfit. Obviously, his classic garb with the Corellian Bloodstripe pants and white shirt, black vest, that sort of stuff isn't generally available from many other vendors unless you go the customized fan route where you commission it from somebody or you sew it yourself. But not everyone has that kind of skill set, and it can be tricky to source that sort of stuff on the sort of fan-made market to fit you and to the sort of quality that you want. Innovus had a legacy for doing very, very accurate fabrics, particularly known for their Star Trek stuff. They would get samples of the original costumes and get factories to basically manufacture the exact same fabric.
Oh, yeah, before they got bogged down and, you know, dropped the ball effectively, let's be blunt, on the Star Wars material, they had quite a good reputation for their Star Trek movie and series accurate costumes and costume components.
So I'm glad to see, and we've seen reports of New Zealanders being able to order from the website and getting stock shipped basically straight away. So we might finally have a source for, you know, direct stuff. We've yet to see whether local retailers will stock this product in the way that we saw both Weta for a short while and Mighty Ape was stocking select Innovus product, generally mostly just the helmets available locally. But this bodes well if you're a prop or a if you are a prop collector or a costumer and want components from a licensed retailer. Obviously, licensed collectibles do tend to retain a resale value a little better than fan-made components. Or if you're just one of those people that just wants proper, fully licensed official stuff, I'm really excited to see this list that includes accessories, fabric, and sort of garment components, as well as full helmets.
So we'll be keeping a close eye on the product and product announcement coming out of Dino Novo, because we are fans of costuming ourselves, but because helmets are a great collectible, a great high-end collectible for your display shelf as well.
Just as a side point, if you had an outstanding Innovus order, do contact Duo Novo, because they will give you some updated information about the current standing of your order.
Of that product with its manufacture time.
They will let you know how far in the pipeline that will be. Obviously, things like helmets are going to be a little bit faster to manufacture than any outstanding soft goods, but it's good to know and just to kind of get a little bit of a check-in with the status of your money.
Let you confirm that your specific order associated with your order number has been handed over appropriately from Innovus to whoever is handling the Denuo Novo customer service and ordering system at this point in time.
So at this point, it looks like they aren't cancelling those orders. It looks like they do want to fulfill those orders rather than to go through the very complicated process of trying to give everyone back their money.
Oh, so, trying to refund orders that were placed 4 or 5 years ago, that would just be a major chore. Not a good look either.
And I think for the most part, most fans would just rather have the product, rather than just get your money back, because there aren't too many other options right now for a lot of this product.
Well, if you've been waiting for years, if you put an order in and you've been waiting for years, at least knowing that your order is still alive and that there is a probably slightly more believable delivery date associated with that is useful information.
So sometimes when companies close down and they get shunted to somebody else, it can mean negative things, but I think on the whole, I'm very excited with this development with Duonovo. So all good things, especially that they can ship to New Zealand.
Just because your name is slightly easier to say, Duonovo, just a little bit of a tongue twister.
It might just get shunken down to Novo.
On DN, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so also slightly on the topic of costume components, I guess. We talked about the Rey Skywalker Force FX lightsaber being announced at the Hasbro Pulse Fan Fest a little while back. That is available for pre-order from a few local retailers. It is up on Mighty Ape locally for $499. We talked about that price point, but you can click through and pre-order that right now. Also on Mighty Ape, just a random thing that cropped up that's kind of fun. Stormtrooper closed the blast door's doormat, so welcome mats for your door, priced at $45. Mighty Ape actually has a few different Star Wars doormats, and we think Star Warsifying your house in all these different ways is actually a fun concept. We do it a lot, so not just collectibles on our shelves, but we like Star Warsifying personally our house with functional items, and doormats are amongst those. Now, every year, LEGO does a range of advent calendars, and Star Wars LEGO calendars have been amongst those for quite a while now. They're very popular. They tend to sell out. They have shown up in New Zealand, so the 2021 Star Wars LEGO advent calendars are showing up in New Zealand. They have been confirmed at many, if not most, branches of the warehouse around the country, but stocks are always limited and people grab these pretty fast. At the time of recording, you can order via Mighty Ape. The 2021 advent calendar includes 7 Star Wars characters, 11 mini build vehicles, which includes the Razor Crest, Riot Mars Starfighter, so that's the Starfighter chasing the Razor Crest in one of the early episodes of The Mandalorian, an Imperial Troop Transport, X-Wing, TIE Fighter, Imperial Light Cruiser, Boba Fett Starship, and a Child's Hover Pram. So most of those are themed around Mandalorian characters and vehicles and scenarios. But these are always popular, so if you are after it, grab it earlier rather than later. Now, a new and upcoming license that we want to talk about just in a little bit more detail because it really caught our attention is Star Wars giftware, Star Wars candles, pins, and jewellery coming from an Australian company called Short Story. We've seen their product from other franchises, from Disney franchises, show up at EB Games locally, so I had a little bit of familiarity with it. But they've launched a huge Star Wars range that's up for pre-order now, and it's going to be coming out on the 10th of October. It's particularly relevant to New Zealand because they only have a license for New Zealand, Australia, and Singapore from memory at this point in time. So this isn't a product that's available all around the world or from many other retailers. You buy direct from their website, and if you go to their website, I think it seems to auto-detect that you're coming from New Zealand and show prices in New Zealand dollars. And the shipping from Australia is actually pretty fair for some, based on the mass, the weight of the products you're buying. So Short Story is a company that produces high-end giftware, very fancy deluxe candles, some really nice jewellery, enameled pins. They also do air fresheners for the car and an oil diffuser. And the Star Wars items in this range so far look pretty good.
Yeah, I'm always on the lookout for Star Wars fashion and accessories and things that are just unique. And I've long been a fan of the Short Story Disney candles. Every time I see them on display at EB Games, I'm quite impressed with their visual appeal, as well as obviously candles are all about the aromas, and always just held off because obviously I'm a big Star Wars fan and that's generally where most of my wallet goes. So I was very, very excited to see that that Disney license had expanded into Star Wars, so I can finally enjoy their beautiful candles. The candles come with a decorative top that's sort of got different crystals or stones that each match the character that's behind the theme and kind of have a little bit of a story behind it. as well as a little pin that sits on the surface. So it looks really beautiful, all displayed. They make beautiful gifts. As you say, this is a giftware company. And they've also expanded the Star Wars line beyond just the candles. They have a range of jewelry, which includes quite a few necklaces and earrings. They're all very beautiful, all inspired by some classic characters like Darth Vader, Stormtrooper. They've got Baby Yoda in there. And of course, from The Mandalorian, they have Ahsoka stuff. So that's going to be very popular as well. The pins that are on the top of all the candles are available to buy separately if you just want to pin collect. They have air fresheners, a very beautiful sort of Death Star inspired oil diffuser. Now, their Disney line includes all sorts of other things like plug-in lamps, beautiful artwork for your walls, all sorts of little trinkets and gifts. So I'm really keen to see them continue this line. Obviously, they have had Disney for quite some time. This isn't like a one-and-done short little quickfire collab with Disney. So I'm hoping that their Star Wars range will continue to grow. But I am very excited that For once, us here in New Zealand get something that isn't widely available internationally, that it's actually a pretty small territory that can get this stuff. So if you want something that's a little bit more unique, that isn't, you know, all over Amazon and eBay, it's definitely worth checking out. And they make beautiful gifts.
The one thing that really struck us about this company is that they've been around for a little while now. And we checked out some of their behind us and some of their development material on their social media streams. The one thing that really struck us about the company is the uniqueness of their design process and the quality of the product. They're not just taking existing graphics or concepts and slapping it onto a candle or whatever. They're really putting effort into the design and thought and background to each of these products. And it really shows they were established before they got the Star Wars and Disney licenses in the giftware market, which is obviously fairly competitive. It's like, you know, in terms of the number of other people producing this sort of stuff, but they were successful. So they're doing things right.
Some fans may remember the range of original trilogy candle sets that were sold locally through EB Games. They were a set of about five sort of short little cube candles that were each inspired by a different sort of Star Wars thing. But these were essentially little square glass containers, very small candles with a sticker on the front of it. Now, it's Star Wars. They're fun. They had some really interestingly inspired scents for the candles, but you take away the stickers off the front and they were just plain candles.
We've seen that happen with other products, haven't we? Makeup in the UK, makeup. They take an existing product and they slap Star Wars on it.
Where it's literally a peel-on sticker. They haven't changed the actual packaging much in any way. It's still a standard thing.
No thought into the design or the concept or the relationship between the product and the naming or conceptualization of it.
Yeah. You scroll down the information about each candle, there's all this kind of description about the different fragrances, the characters, the little decorative stones on the top and the pin. And of course, there is actual Star Wars branding on the actual candle jar. It isn't just a sticker. It's actually all sort of beautifully printed.
The presentation's fantastic. The graphics on the candle boxes is fantastic. The packaging for the jewelry looks really fun, coming in those little corked glass jars.
Yes, yeah. Really unique ways of packaging things. So I am so, so excited for this collection, and it's definitely worth checking out. Also could be fun if you're got like a significant other that's maybe not so much into Star Wars,
that likes it, but it's not a collector maybe.
Yeah, that you can just enjoy a candle. And one other thing that I particularly like about it is I'm always torn about candles. I love beautiful scented candles, but it's kind of like lighting money on fire. You don't have anything left when it's gone. But with these candles, you have a collection of beautiful little stones and a collectible pin when the whole thing's gone. So you're not left without and just sort of turfing an empty jar in the bin. You're left with a collectible that you can keep forever afterwards.
So Star Wars candles might not have been high on your shopping list prior to us discussing this, but you know, I think they're really a nice product, so they are worth just at least eyeballing in the first instance. We'll put a link direct to their website, but we have started to cover this on the SWNZ website as well. And rounding out the product announcement news, just cropped up first thing today on Friday, coming out in the US as a Target exclusive, but as we always, when we're discussing about these, we are seeing US exclusives showing up in New Zealand, so we're keeping our fingers crossed for these through some local retailer, even if it's only an online-only retailer. Vintage Collection and Black Series figures in the style of vintage droids carded figures. There is a 6-inch Boba Fett in his holiday special animated, droids animated color style with a box that's reminiscent of the vintage droids carded figures. And there's also a Boba Fett, a C-3PO, and R2-D2, again with the droids logo and droid style, animated style cardbacks of the 80s.
This is kind of fun. I was not old enough to really have too much nostalgia for vintage cards in that era, but this is kind of, I guess, in that same line of doing, you know, recarded things. And the droid stuff is kind of fun. Like, they've put the series on Disney Plus, so you can go back and watch it for all its sort of quirkiness. But the packaging is really quite neat.
So, yeah, like I say, fingers crossed that we'll see these locally. And if we do, we'll find another good way to purchase them. We'll be talking about it on the podcast and talking about it on the SWZ website. So on Wednesday night this past week, we sat down to watch Star Wars Visions. We've been talking about it and anticipating it for quite some time. It ended up being over 2.5 hours worth of content, and I think a lot of people listening will have already seen it. We'll talk about these in a little bit of detail. Some of the things we mentioned might be considered a little bit spoilery, but this is all independent of canon. And the twists are, you know, we won't give away too much in terms of the twists for each episode. And I don't think any of it's particularly spoilery in terms of the way it relates to canon, because it's not canon material, but just a little bit of a forewarning if you haven't watched all of the episodes yet. But just as a general concept, this series seems to have gone down incredibly well with the fandom, and we certainly agree with that. We checked out, for what it's worth, the IMDb ratings on all of these, and they're scoring, you know, very well, you know, 8 and upwards for most episodes, and they seem to be generally aligned with our perspectives on each of the different episodes, our favourites and so forth. So there's definitely some episodes that stand out as being real fan favourites, but across the board I really enjoyed these. I wouldn't call any of them, you know, complete dud or complete miss. I think they're all really fun content.
I went into this kind of excited, not really knowing what too much to expect. I just sort of wanted to go in with a sort of an open mind and unbiased and just sort of enjoy it for the random Star Wars content. As I've said before, I enjoy all of the bits and pieces out there, like some of the Lego stuff, obviously the micro series going back, and just I really enjoyed the series. Obviously, some stood out to me more than others, but that was kind of the point. The point was to do a variety of different things so that there was a little bit for everyone, depending on your particular tastes, the different storylines, the different art style. And there were quite a few that I really, really liked. And I could very well picture a season 2 of Visions where they perhaps do like a second part of some of these stories, because there was a lot of world building in some of these.
Yeah, no, the stories weren't on the whole overly complex. There was a lot of just good versus bad, pretty straightforward stories with, you know, a little bit of a different context mixed in. But the thing that really, really sort of, regardless of that simplicity, on the whole, some of them did have a little bit more depth and a little bit more surprise than others. On the whole, I found them just engaging, I think. And this was obviously why they were developed. The artistic style is intended to really tell a story in a different way than live action possibly can or easily can. And that really came through right from the get-go. We watched The Duel first, and that's the one that stood out to me the most in many ways. I just felt myself looking and inspecting every little detail for every little bit of enjoyment to draw out of the artistic style of the whole thing. Now, we sat down and watched them in the order that they presented on Disney Plus, and we're just going to have a little bit of a talk about each of the episodes in the order that they showed up on Disney Plus. First up was The Duel, coming in at 15 minutes duration. This currently has an IMDb rating of 8.6, so that's quite high. It's well received. And this is also, interestingly, the first episode that is going to have additional tie-in content. There is a novel coming out in October called Ronin by Emma Maiko Kandon. It's available for pre-order now. We'll put some links down below. Hardback edition is approximately $40, and there's also a paperback version at $29. The synopsis for the novel actually gives us a little bit more information and backstory with which to interpret the episode, so I think it's useful just to take a quick look at that. It's described as being: far on the edge of the Outer Rim, one former Sith wanders, accompanied only by a faithful droid and the ghost of a less civilized age. He carries a lightsaber but claims lineage to no clan and pledges allegiance to no lord. Little is known about him, including his name, for he never speaks of his past nor his regrets. His history is as guarded as the red blade of destruction he carries sheathed at his side. As the galaxy's perpetual cycle of violence continues to interrupt his self-imposed exile, and he is forced to duel an enigmatic bandit claiming the title of Sith, it becomes clear that no amount of wandering will ever let him outpace the spectres of his former life. This episode starred, in terms of the English language version, Lucy Liu as the bandit leader, and Brian T as Ronan, and Jaden Waldman as the village chief. Interestingly, Jaden Waldman also featured in the episode T0B1, or 2B1, depending on how you want to say that. Now, this is the first one we watched, and it had us hooked straight away. I think in some ways it was the most Star Wars-y, for want of a better word, of all the episodes, because there was just a ton of genuine Star Wars material scattered around the background and the characters. But the artistic style for this was just fantastic. Mostly black and white with pops of colour for emphasis, but really smooth three-dimensional animation sort of rendered in a 2D sketchy monochrome largely style. It gave a real bit of a gritty feel that tied in well to the story, but we loved this.
Oh, the artwork in this, the styling of it was just absolutely beautiful. We'd seen glimpses of it in the trailers and preview material, but without sort of being able to watch it, we weren't sure to what context or how long or which stories these were attached to. So I was kind of really excited when I realized that the one with the tie-in book was the one with the beautiful, beautiful artwork. It really did. There were moments where sort of like dust was blowing by and wind and just the detail, and just it's all sort of black and white, as you say, with just a few pops of color for emphasis, but it really was very engaging. It felt like watching paintings move. It was really beautiful. And as you say, I found it to be one of my favorite stories. I was immediately intrigued with certain plot developments and things like that. And I'm like, I could see a whole series about this character. I immediately want to read this book in a way that I wasn't sure. Like, watching 15 minutes of, experimental animation is one thing. It's another thing to sit down and read a book for many hours, but I'm already very, very intrigued about the story, and I want to read it.
A mysterious character, mysterious ex-warrior or ex-criminal or whatever, is a little bit of a trope in some ways, but there was enough detail, and the same for the villain in this episode as well. There's enough detail to just really make you want to know more without being cliche on those particular tropes.
There was so much, as you say, Star Warsiness to this, that it almost crosses the boundary into canon. It was totally believable that this could fit if Star Wars had been written by, a Japanese director rather than an American one. There was just enough Asian influence in the style, and obviously the main character has much more of a samurai feel than perhaps a classic sort of Jedi outfit, sort of with the robes and things like that. Obviously they do pull from Asian outfits, but I loved all the little nods. There were sort of references to alien species and weapons. And at one point there was a vehicle made out of an old AT-AT, and there's old stormtrooper armor and droids that we recognize and love. And it was just there were so many little things scattered through it. It was, you feel like you need to watch it in slow motion just to see all the little moments. There were some really neat aliens. There was
the Trandoshan. The RA series droid with his rotary blast.
Exactly like they were pulled from Star Wars movies.
I want to talk about the sound. I mean, the sound effects were great. The weapon sounds in particular. I love the Tusken Raider with his gaffy stick over his head. I love the RA-7 droid. We saw a Doug driving a gutted probe droid. The Grand was the only alien, I think, to survive. One tiny thing that I did pick up, the weapon that the Grand was using was actually based on the weapon that came with the vintage Reyes action figure, a funny, unique blaster with a big vibro blade bayonet attached to the front of it. But there was that sort of level of detail just hidden in the background that really made this work and really was a great way, a great episode to start on.
Yeah, and the ending kind of left it really open-ended. Like, it's not like unsatisfying ending, it's that kind of like slightly open-ended in that you really want more. It's such a well-constructed capsule. It gives you enough information to sort of jump straight into the story, straight into the action, and it kind of wraps up in a way where you're like, that was really good, I want more.
I mean, it's a little bit spoiling, so I hope you've watched it, but only a few seconds worth of storytelling of taking out the kyber crystal from the lightsaber and tucking it into a revealed collection of kyber crystals spoke so much and left so much unanswered that it was just purely engaging.
Yeah, like, I wanted to know, like, so much more about this character, his history. Why is he doing this? What is the purpose of this? He's carrying a red blade, but does he still align with the dark side? Is this kind of some sort of Sith trying to eradicate all other Sith? Is this a Sith that has come to see the error of his ways and he's trying to eradicate other Sith and he's more light side aligned? But, like, oh, it was just... Oh, I loved his lightsaber slash sword had that deep sort of whir like Kylo Ren's lightsaber. It was just such a dramatic sound. It really sort of added to it. It was just really well done.
They paused on that revelation of his blade coming out of the scabbard. But they also played, I mean, that was one example of really just playing with camera angles and camera techniques as part of the storytelling and, you know, drama. I mean, you know, if you play with different camera angles, you can really emphasize drama and emphasize movement in a unique way. And they did do that a lot.
As well as sort of playing around with very established Star Wars sort of elements and things like that, I did like the playful nature of the sort of the main villain here, having what amounts to be sort of like a spinning lightsaber shield. It sort of looks like an umbrella, but she wields it to deadly effect. And it's really quite an interesting sort of take on sort of the way that you could use a lightsaber in a spinning motion, like we see Grievous use to a certain effect, but this one is more sort of used to deflect blaster fire by spinning. It was kind of really fascinating to sort of see sort of like a really original sort of idea playing in here. But it felt like it wasn't like really wacky or anything. It completely fit with the style of the villain and just the whole piece. I think the main character would make a fabulous collectible. Like if they make a statue or something like that, the art style, the interesting aspects to this character, I can see them kind of doing a whole shoot off with this. They may not. They may try to keep it sort of contained to kind of control the sort of leak of this sort of stuff into canon, or they may find that, okay, this is something that the fans really love. Let's tap this for merchandising because we kind of keep telling everyone it's not canon, so we're in the clear. Let's just go running amok.
There's a ton of apparel from Fifth Son coming out via Amazon for the Star Wars Visions, and some of its concepts, some of that stuff didn't even make it into the actual episode, so there's definitely tie-in with product.
And we see definitely just jumping across to Marvel with their What If series, which is also kind of playing around in the not really canon, but we're kind of going to play with it. And then Hot Toys coming out of nowhere and making some beautiful 12-inch scale collectibles based on these little sort of one-shot What If stories. Now, that's a pretty high price point to dive into for something that's contained to about 30, 40 minutes. It's just this is kind of an interesting, like, pondering thing. So
stuff,
I could easily see Lucasfilm / Disney maybe going the same route with some of these vision stories.
Yeah. So the Duel, clearly one of our favorites and the one that's the easiest to talk about in some ways, but that's not to mean that we didn't love a lot of the other episodes, and we're going to work through some of those just now. So let's just keep looking at them in the order that they were released. Tatooine Rhapsody came in at 14 minutes. This started in the English language version again. Don't forget that you can watch, if you're interested, a Japanese language version with different voice talent and subtitles. You can make that selection on Disney+. We watched them the first time around in the English language versions, and there are a lot of recognizable names amongst the voice talent that worked on these. Tatooine Rhapsody came in at 14 minutes. Starred Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Jay, the protagonist, the main character. Temuera Morrison shows up as Boba Fett. Bobby Moynihan plays Geeza the Hutt. Shelby Young, a name you might not recognize, she played the droid K-344, but she also voiced Princess Leia in the Forces of Destiny animated series. Tatooine Rhapsody isn't scoring as high on IMDb, coming in about 5.9. I think this one's a little bit more divisive because of the style and perhaps some of the story elements. I personally really quite enjoyed it. I enjoyed the variation. It really stood out as being a little bit different from the straight up good versus evil lightsaber battle type story of most of the other episodes. And I liked some particular elements of it. It was fun seeing Temuera Morrison voicing Boba Fett again in this way. All of the background Jabba's henchmen type characters were actually recognizable characters from Return of the Jedi, or the Skiff Guards looked like specific characters that we've seen in action figure form and so forth. So, yeah, not everyone's favorite, but I did like this episode.
Yes, obviously the component of kind of putting what was essentially sort of like a rock band into Star Wars might be a little bit jarring for some people. Obviously, we're used to sort of more unique Star Wars music within the movies and things like that.
But this one showed the Modal Nodes, didn't it? It showed, yes, the Modal Nodes were checking out the rock band and being, yeah, a bit bummed that they didn't get the gig.
Yeah, but there were certain elements that I did really enjoy. I thought Boba Fett was really fun in this episode. I particularly enjoyed the way that they rendered the sort of pod racing arena and elements from around Tatooine. They were putting in little things that people would recognize from various Tatooine places. You even get a shot of old Ben's house on the hill. So it felt like they were sort of trying to pull in as much Star Wars elements as they could, but kind of keeping, it kind of felt like it would be the sort of story that would appeal to a younger audience. This felt like, and I know that when it comes to Star Wars, Star Wars is like for all ages, and there's going to be content that's going to appeal to an older audience, and there's going to be content that appeals to a younger audience. And I feel like perhaps for us, this is the sort of thing that was going to resonate more with a younger audience. Certainly the animation style is a little bit more cartoon than some of the other entries in the series. But it was still fun. You know, this isn't to be taken seriously. They're just fun. It's just kind of telling different random stories that would never appear in a classic Star Wars animated series. So I thought it was fun to see somebody playing around with, you know, just sort of different aspects, but still including lots of Star Wars elements in there.
That's the beauty of the series, is it's just different people's visions, and they're going to appeal slightly differently to different people, to different audiences, to different sub-audiences. And yeah, this was just a nice bit of variation thrown into the mix. The Twins, the third episode we watched, came in at 18 minutes. This episode, in the English language version, starred Alison Brie from Community and Glow as Am, the female of the two twins, and Neil Patrick Harris as the brother of the twins. Jonathan Lepow is in there as B-20N, the Black Protocol droid. Mention his name specifically because he's done a lot of voice work for other Star Wars material, Resistance, Bad Batch, and Star Wars The Old Republic. Now, fantastic visuals on this episode in terms of the storytelling. This is probably one of my least favorites. Not that that's a bad thing. It's, you know, across the board, one of them has to be my least favorite. That's not saying don't watch it or that you can't disagree with me, obviously. I just found a few story elements a little bit less Star Wars-y in some ways and a little bit a little harder to swallow, the whole notion of the functioning of the Star Destroyers needing to be aligned with the armor that the characters happen to be wearing. But the visually fantastic, some really cool things, great sound effects as well. And I think just the visual style may be, you know, aligned with some specific anime styles that you might be familiar with and might actually prefer.
I think I enjoyed this one more than you. I've got a bit of a soft spot for really interesting sort of dark side armor for women. And I really did enjoy the designs of the two twins, sort of dark energy armor. It was kind of like they had sort of fractured Darth Vader's armor and kind of isolated it down to like a male version and a female version. And I found the sort of the concept of having sort of these joined Star Destroyers with a Death Star like cannon in the middle really interesting. And I think I would put this one perhaps a little higher in my list if I wasn't coming to it from such a Star Wars fan angle. I kept trying to sort of critique elements in it like you, like oh, they need the suits to power up and stuff like that. And they were fighting in space without helmets on and stuff like that. But I think if you're coming from it from more of an anime style,
yeah,
or just somebody that isn't getting quite as bogged down in like Star Wars details, that you would appreciate it more.
Slightly more metaphorical storytelling in some ways, and the visuals really play into that. It was definitely strong from that angle, without a doubt.
Yeah, there were some really fun sort of elements when the sort of particular angles they were playing with when there's an X-Wing in flight. They sort of played with that, and sort of the camera angles when they're fighting outside. I thought it was kind of interesting. Some of the sort of fighting went on a little longer than I thought maybe, because this is one of the slightly longer episodes, but I'm obviously coming at it from a Star Wars fan perspective. I am not as familiar with anime. This is probably a fairly common sort of fight style in other anime series, so I don't want to judge it too harshly on that. But just in terms of where it is in the list, I enjoyed the sort of the art style, the basic storyline. I don't really need more story from this like I do from the first one, but I thought it was fun.
Okay, the Village Bride coming in at 19 minutes duration, scoring a solid 8.0 on IMDb at the time of recording. Obviously, these ratings on IMDb will change over time as more and more people vote, but it's a strong indicator that it's well received at this point. I liked this episode. There's some really fantastic world building that just sort of unwrapped at a slow pace, and you really had to pay attention to work out who was who and what meant what. There was intentional mystery associated with this episode. This episode starred Karen Fukuhara as a character called F. She was the Padawan. Her name's not mentioned. She is from Suicide Squad movie as Katana, smaller character in the original Suicide Squad movie, but fun to see that connection. Christopher Sean played Asu. He is, of course, Kazuda Zayano from the Resistance animated series. Big name in pop culture movies is Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa. He played Falco. And Andrew Kishino was the character Izuma. He is worth mentioning because he also shows up in The Ninth Jedi, but has also done voices in Star Wars Rebels. He was the original Saw Gerrera in the 2012 version of The Clone Wars. So we see a visiting Jedi and a Padawan basically observing local rituals, who it turns out are being oppressed by an Imperial character. And there's some really cool interpretations of the Force in this one, I think. And that's one of the essence of this, is a combination of local culture and slightly different interpretation of the Force. And we see some really cool Force powers and renditions of Force powers in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like it ranks very highly on IMDb. I guess it just didn't feel like quite as standout as The Duel and things like that. But there were some really fun aspects in this. I did really enjoy the characters. It kind of drew me in. There was obviously, you know, there was conflict between two sisters. One felt that she had to marry to kind of, you know, resolve things in her village, and the sister was against it. And then we've got sort of this sort of sabotage moment when sort of the oppressors figure out that her sister is trying to sort of undermine things, and that's when, just when you think that somebody's about to get killed, that's when the Jedi steps in and sort of reveals herself and gets herself involved. And so this kind of feels like the sort of stories that we would have seen before Phantom Menace, you know, when the Jedi were sort of, you know, the peaceful protectors of the galaxy. They'd go around and try and sort of help quell problems like this. So I could sort of see sort of interesting elements in there. I thought there were some really beautiful designs. The villains were interesting. It's not sort of my highest, but it's far from but down the bottom of my list.
I enjoyed the slow pace and the world building associated with it, and it's a pretty solid score in terms of overall fan reception. Ninth Jedi is scoring highly, coming in at 8.9 on IMDb. This was a long episode, 23 minutes. Possibly one of the reasons it's scoring so highly is that it's starring Simu Liu as Zima. Simu Liu is Shang-Chi in Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, which has just come out from Marvel. Also, a couple of other fun names in the voice talent lineup. Neil Kaplan is the narrator, not a name many will recognize. He is famously or infamously one of the most hated characters in SWTOR, Skadj, a companion that you can get that most people love to hate or just straight up hate. Masi Oka played a character called Ethan. He is Toshi from the local production of the movie The Meg, but also well known as being Hero in Heroes. And Andrew Kishina as Juro. Mention his name because he also showed up in The Village Bride. So The Ninth Jedi really played with a specific point in time where there is conflict in Star Wars. That is the main theme of Star Wars, between good and evil. But a point in time where Jedi aren't strong, Jedi aren't abundant. Access to lightsabers or components for lightsabers is challenging. And quite a fun way that this one unfolded on the whole.
Yeah, this was one where I felt like there was a huge amount of sort of world building that had gone into it. The concept of there being sort of Jedi scattered around the galaxy, but no one really has lightsabers anymore. And so this kind of benefactor is trying to build lightsabers to basically equip the Jedi to kind of protect the galaxy again and sort of resurrect the Jedi, which is a really sort of interesting aspect. And immediately you're like, oh, okay, is this person like, did they have ulterior motives? What is going on here? How can he build lightsabers when the Jedi can't seem to? And we sort of take to the story from the viewpoint of the daughter of the man who was making the lightsabers. So we see how they're sort of harvesting it. And obviously, as soon as this sort of thing is being created and more people know about lightsabers being in existence, that's going to attract both Jedi and not so Jedi people. So obviously people come to try and take lightsabers, you know, stuff starts to happen. There are some fun moments in there. And then of course we get to this really fun scene when, I mean, well, I hope you've seen it without spoiling it, but yeah. when the Jedi that have been summoned to get lightsabers, when they take hold of the lightsabers, they all, because the girl talks about, because she's waving one of the lightsabers around in her father's workshop, and she makes the comment that she would love to see what colors they are when the Jedi get them, because as was established in the Ahsoka Tano novel, that the color kind of comes from the wielder's alignment to the Force, so that's why there's sort of a bit more wider variety of color crystals in Star Wars than just blue and green / red. So she's talking about wanting to see what colors they would be. And then as a bit of a tease, we do actually finally get to see what colors these lightsabers ignite as. And when we see these Jedi turn on the lightsabers, we suddenly see that these lightsabers turn on red, and that we subsequently find out that these weren't Jedi. Some of the Jedi that were summoned were basically killed and Sith kind of infiltrated in their place.
It was a fun twist because it felt like the setup felt like you were trying to assess whether or not it was a trap for Jedi, when in reality it was actually a trap for Sith.
You think that, yeah, maybe this benefactor is drawing the remaining Jedi in the galaxy into a trap to try and sort of wipe them out or something like that. And as it turns out that, yeah, it's the Sith trying to basically trap this person that's trying to resurrect the Jedi, because obviously they want to put a stop to that. But it was just a really fun idea. I liked the art in this. I liked the characters. I think it was a really fascinating idea. I could easily see that sort of story being told in a Star Wars canon way. I don't know exactly where it would fit in the timeline. So it kind of, I guess, works best to do it outside the timeline. This would either be very, very old when, you know, somehow people have lost the ability to do lightsabers, or way, way beyond the sequels, way off into the future, you know, where it's kind of just just an echo of, you know, the Jedi and Sith of old. But it certainly works well in a sort of a non-canon way. So you don't really need to know anything about the specific timelines where this would fit in. It was just a really interesting story, and I could easily see this being one that could be expanded upon in maybe a possible season two. I mean,
it felt like a origin story. It felt like the start of another chapter.
I wanted to know a little bit before this, like, what happened to the lightsabers? Why don't even Jedi and Sith have lightsabers anymore? How does this planet able to manufacture them?
Well, they were getting, from memory, they were getting the Kyber crystals from the rings of the planet. They're harvesting them.
So it was really sort of fascinating. And I liked the sort of the creativity with this.
Yeah.
That there was intrigue that
it's
was
one that we're going to have to watch. I mean, so far we've watched everything just once. We watched the duel a couple of times just because you needed to get all the background detail. But so far we've only had the time to watch each of these once. But we definitely want to go back and watch them all again, and particularly ones like this with a few more twists and a little bit more complexity to the story to really appreciate it. So some of our conversations that we're having here now are based on just singular viewings, and we'd love to hear what all of your respective thoughts are on each of these episodes, what your favourites were and so forth. And if you picked up on anything that we missed or interpreted anything differently from what we missed as well, I'd love to have that conversation. But this is one I definitely want to go back and watch again. All right, the episode entitled T0B1 or TOB1 or Toby. A shorter one, 15 minutes. Again, not scoring quite as highly on IMDb, coming in at 6.6, possibly similar to Tatooine Rhapsody, because it might have been aimed at a slightly different audience, and it definitely had a different style of animation. But I thought there were some fun aspects to this. It stars Kyle Chandler as Mitaka. He is from the TV series Early Edition, but shown up more recently in Godzilla King of the Monsters. And Jaden Waldman as the droid T0B1, later known as Toby. His name is mentionable because he was the village chief in the duel.
This was a cute one. I know some people, when the sort of synopsis came out as some sort of Jedi droid, people were like, but it's cute. It's aspirational. It's kind of a bit of a Pinocchio story. You know, the little robot boy wanting to sort of grow up and being a Jedi. And it's got a very cute animation style. This is obviously quite different to other entries in the list. I thought this one was cute. It was a little bit more simple in its storytelling, being one of the shorter entries in there as well. I didn't hate it. It doesn't make me need more of the story. There was an interesting villain. I did like all the little assorted little droids that were also in the story. I thought they were very cute, like sort of like little fairy animals, but in droid form. And yeah, like it's sort of one of those ones where I like it. It's kind of warm, fuzzy, cute. But yeah, it's probably going to appeal more to a younger audience than perhaps the classic Star Wars audience.
Right, The Elder came in at 17 minutes, scoring solidly on IMDb at 8.4. I think this is one that's up there alongside The Duel. There's one of the ones that I think is going to stand the test of time as a very solid installment. I mean, this was in essence a Padawan and his master visiting a planet based on reports of a sinister elder, and they were checking out the disturbance in the force that's associated with him. Starred Jordan Fisher as the main character, or the main Padawan character, Dan. David Harbour as the master, Tajin. He's obviously from Stranger Things, Hellboy, Black Widow. Included James Hong as the elder. James Hong is a very fun actor and a very renowned actor. He was starring the Kung Fu Panda, famously showed up in an episode of Seinfeld, many of you will remember. He has actually been in Star Wars Rebels before. He's noteworthy because he's got over 400 acting credits on IMDb, and he's quite famous as a strong supporter of Asian American representation in the film and theater industry. And just as a side note, he's actually lined up to get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame next year alongside Carrie Fisher and Francis Ford Coppola. So just a little bit of trivia associated with James Hong that I just thought was fun to acknowledge and worth mentioning. But The Elder, a fairly simple story in many ways, but just well executed, and you feel like you get character development just from dialogue. This was an episode about a lot of dialogue, and I think a lot, you know, that's what made it interesting and engaging in many ways.
This one reminds me of some of the sort of junior target novels that were sort of about Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon when they were younger, before The Phantom Menace. It's just sort of just a classic Jedi and Padawan going to sort of, you know, just a sort of a routine.
But there's, you know, there's check learning it out type and exchange stuff. Of information, yeah. between
and
the two.
And humorous moments, you kind of see that sort of bond between, yeah, you know, master and apprentice here. Yeah. And yeah, it wasn't like a fast-paced one, but it was kind of a little bit suspenseful. Like watching it, they were not exactly sure what they're checking out, but you're like, you kind of get the sense that, yeah, they're gonna get in trouble here, that there's going to be something that's going to happen. And it kind of reveals itself in sort of steps, as you would, sort of like an investigation. You know, they find a slain animal, they find a very sinister looking ship before coming across the Elder himself. There's a couple of sort of moments when the Padawan is injured and, you know, they play it as an, oh no, he got killed. But at the end, we find out that all is well, he didn't die, and they sort of learn from it. But I thought the fighting in it was interesting. It wasn't, you know, obviously in the same style as some of the other episodes in this list, but I did enjoy it. I found like these were really interesting characters. The Jedi Padawan felt very classic in his look. He had a Padawan braid and everything like that. Yeah, the master was giving me really strong Qui-Gon vibes with the sort of look and demeanor, the sort of quiet talking and things like that. But yeah, I thought it was really well done. This is one where I could see more adventures of this Jedi team. It didn't sort of have a big world building. It just sort of felt classic Star Wars.
It was about the characters, about the relationship rather than the setting.
It almost could be canon, apart from the fact that there would be just a random Sith running around. But it sort of felt like the sort of thing that could have happened prior to Phantom Menace if we discount the fact that there's a Sith running around. But yeah, maybe something that would happen, you know, in many, many years before Phantom Menace.
The galaxy's a big place.
Yeah. It felt good. I thought the voice acting was really good. I liked the animation style. Yeah, I can see why it ranks this high on IMDb. It's definitely one of my favorites from the list.
It's definitely coming in one of the top three in terms of overall fan reception. Next on the list, Lop and Oko, a longer one at 21 minutes, scoring reasonably well at 7.5 on IMDb, so not top three, but still pretty solid in terms of overall reception. This one was interesting. It starred Anna Cathcart as Lop. She's a younger actress who starred in the Netflix series To All the Boys I Loved Before and the Disney series Descendants movies. I think they came out before Disney Plus, but so she's got a little bit of a filmography, but she is a younger actress. And Hiromi Dames as Oko. This one surprised me. I mean, it really got quite dark by the end of it, didn't it?
Yes.
But a good twist, a good story in terms of, you know, family relationships and, you know, adoptive family and so forth, and the passing on of the Force down family, the Force and Jedi weaponry down family lines. I thought it actually panned out really nicely in the end, despite the darkness of the final conflict.
Yeah, like going into it, knowing that one of the primary characters is essentially sort of a bunny humanoid with the ears. We've certainly seen sort of animal humanoids in Star Wars before. We have Cathar, we have other sort of characters like that. So it wasn't too jarring. Obviously, she's animated in more of a cute style than maybe a realistic style. But I thought this might just be sort of like a cute story. But as you say, it went dark pretty strongly. The
pitting sister against adopted sister was the essence of the twist.
Yeah, it was very strongly on family. We have the Lop being sort of being a lost sort of street orphan, being adopted into a sort of two-person family. We've got the father and the daughter, and they're bringing on this adopted sister. And then it jumps to the future where we see that things have developed in a very dramatic way. The sister is now fully aligned with the Empire.
Yeah, but that only just sort of came out kind of slowly and surprisingly. Yes. It wasn't immediately obvious. It just took a second to realize that it came out in conversation, it came out in dialogue. It took a second to realize that, wait, she just said that she was supporting the Empire.
Yeah, and obviously that comes to a head because she is in direct conflict with the father and the adopted sister. And there is the Star Wars element comes in more strongly when we find out that there was an ancient Jedi that passed a lightsaber down the family tree. And the father decides to give it to the adopted daughter rather than the other. So that introduces a big amount of conflict. And it's sort of really about story. I felt that there was a lot of elements in this that pulled on Asian culture more strongly than some of the other ones, particularly some of the outfits and the designs. Particularly the father felt strongly sort of influenced with his apparel. The buildings and houses and things like that felt more inspired. But obviously the likes of having the Empire and lightsabers, it gave it that right amount of Star Wars flavor to still pull it in. And yeah, and it gets really, really dark when we actually see father and now sort of dark side daughter having to fight, which is sort of a little bit of a twist on the sort of Vader versus Luke, but switching the roles. This time it is the parent that is on the light side with the child on the dark side. So I did appreciate the sort of the taking some core Star Wars elements and just twisting them a little bit and giving them sort of like a different spin and a different flavor. And obviously, instead of twins, we've got sort of sisters, you know, adopted and born into the family. So I thought it was really interesting. It kind of left it a little bit open at the end, but I thought it was a really good entry. I'm kind of surprised it's perhaps not as ranked as higher as some of the other ones. Maybe some people can't quite get past the sort of the cuter bunny character compared to, because when the other sister goes dark side, she's very menacing. And so maybe the bunny character is a little at odds with some of the other animation styles, particularly with where the story goes. But I like the playing with Star Wars is full of a lot of aliens. We see fish aliens and
Visions as a concept is intended to give the creators free rein and to draw on their backstory and their history and their approach to animating and character development and so forth. And that's obviously where that came from. All in all, I think this is one not to be judged by its cover.
No, I really enjoyed it.
Okay, final installment, Akakiri at 14 minutes. And this one I found I had to concentrate on just a little bit more because of the way it panned out. But there was some really quite deep twists and turns at the end, and quite a really interesting sort of sinister machinations between the hero and the major villain. This starred George Takei as Senshu, famously Sulu from Star Trek, but has actually also done a Star Wars voice in The Clone Wars. He played a Nemoidian in 2009 in The Clone Wars. Henry Golding as Tsubaki, famously from Crazy Rich Asians, but more recently played Snake Eyes in Snake Eyes, the G.I. Joe story. Lorraine Toussaint as Masako, the main villain. She has done many TV series. Now, one of the big ones that you might know her from is Orange is the New Black. Keone Young as Kamahachi, famously from Samurai Jack, which does have a Star Wars connection through the original Clone Wars micro series, but also did 18 episodes of Rebels as Commander Sato. So a few interesting connections there amongst the voice talent. But Akakiri, panned out a little bit slowly, and you really had to concentrate to interpret what was going on. And I think this really came to a head nearer the end of the actual story. That's where the real interest developed pretty quickly, with a pretty sinister twist where the love interest of the hero is manipulated into the heroes are manipulated into actually fighting her and effectively killing her. But then the villain uses that to turn into the dark side in a very sinister Emperor Palpatine / Anakin Skywalker type moment.
Yeah, so the sort of general synopsis for this, well, the brief one, is that the Jedi has been on this planet before, and he fell in love with basically the princess of the planet, and now he has come back later on. The country is in turmoil because the king's sister has sort of taken over. She is dark side. She is oppressing and controlling everything. So the Jedi has come back to sort of help his former love, to sort of maybe try and take things back. We see him having sort of some sort of premonitions or visions, flashback, something of some sort of masked face, which, as we know in sort of storytelling, is fairly ominous. That's going to be very important down the line. So when we finally get to sort of the palace, we meet the villain, and she's got an impressive army, but instead of trying to just sort of kill them outright, she wants the Jedi to turn to the dark side and join her. She wants, you know, more power on her side, as you know, dark side and controlling sort of rulers do. And he refuses, obviously. He's a Jedi. But through the course of, you know, the story, she sends a whole bunch of sort of armed guards to attack the Jedi. And in the midst of the fight and scuffle, we realize that one of the masked guards was actually the imprisoned princess, that he has struck her down thinking she is a guard, whereas in fact it's actually the princess. So as she's dying / dies, the villain, you know, in true sort of Palpatine style, was like, if you come to the dark side, we can save her. And he loves her too much, and so he does that. And of course, the princess is like, what have you done? And we see at the end, he walks off with the villain. It's kind of one of those things where they are willing to basically sacrifice themselves so that their loved one can live on. Obviously not with them, but it's basically sacrificing his soul, as it were, so that she can live, because he feels too much sort of grief and regret for what he did, because he knew that he couldn't sort of live with himself with her dying at his hand.
Yeah, a very sinister tactic by the main villain, who obviously knew that how it would likely pan out. A cruel twist, but yeah, interestingly executed, so to speak.
Yeah, like it takes a little while to get going. It's a little bit of a slow burn because there's a sort of a comedic element. There's a couple of side characters that are sort of accompanying them on their journey as they try smuggle themselves back into the city because they can't just sort of walk in.
Yeah.
There's sort of like a slow build up.
A lot of prelude before you get to that final conflict, even though it's one of the shorter episodes. It really comes to a crux quite abruptly.
I think it makes you sort of really appreciate the characters, and obviously being a Jedi, he can't sort of fully openly love this woman, but obviously we know through various stories that the Jedi are not perfect and that they do slip. We see the element of the Obi-Wan Satine story, you know, that even the most sort of honorable Jedi can have their heart pulled at. So it was interesting to sort of play on that. And obviously there's a really strong Palpatine Anakin thing here. You know, come to the dark side, use my knowledge, and you can save the one you love. So I liked that sort of classic pulling in there. Yeah, so that one kind of surprised me. And I'm surprised it doesn't rate a little higher on IMDb. Sometimes I feel like because things like The Duel was such a standout entry, the other ones will suffer a little bit because the fans are going to kind of rate them against each other, so they won't reflect quite as high.
That's the challenge of releasing all of them in unheard or even releasing them as a bundle, as a season, is that you'll never really compare them internally. I mean, we've enjoyed just talking about them all here now. We thank you for listening to us, as we always say, ramble on about our passion for Star Wars. We didn't know that we'd necessarily want to go through them all in one singular podcast. It's made for a long podcast, but I just enjoyed it so much. I just felt like I wanted to talk about them in their entirety rather than have to pace it out too much. So we've gone through and we've talked about all of those episodes. And when we go back to watch them, I think we will probably just watch them all the same amount of time. So I think they're all worth just rewatching over and over rather than necessarily, you know, even the ones that rank lower, as you say, because we are comparing them internally. Doesn't mean they're bad. Doesn't mean they're unwatchable. And I think it's a great bundle, and 2.5 hours of overall content, give or take, is a solid movie length hit of content, and it's good to be able to have access to it on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, I liked having sort of like another addition to the sort of array of Star Wars content on Disney Plus. Obviously, a lot of Star Wars fans are going to be sort of chanting for more sort of Clone Wars style canon storytelling. Obviously, Bad Batch season one ending, we know a season two is coming, but that's going to be a little bit wild down the end. And at this point, we haven't really been given any kind of hints about whether they're going to dive in and do another sort of Clone Wars style series set anywhere.
Not official hints anyway.
Yeah, a lot of fans are going to be like, we love the Star Wars animated series, we want a new one, you know, are they just going to keep us going with Bad Batch for a while and then do something else when that one wraps up? You know, are we going to get anything concurrently at the same time? Obviously, the live action stuff is keeping everyone really amped up. But this was just such a sort of fun diversion. I think there is so much to sort of reflect on and enjoy. And if you really like certain elements, then there's going to be, selected merchandise for it. Perhaps even more, because like with greenlighting a second season, you kind of want to know if this is going to be a total disaster or an absolute hit. And they're not going to press go on the merchandising for all of them until they know where things settle. And then they can selectively make, you know, Funkos or little statues or things like that of some of the more popular entries. I'm sure they're looking at the watch stats, looking at reviews and ratings online. But I would say overall, this has been a win.
No, absolutely. On that note, though, that's about it for today's installment, this week's installment. I guess we are done doing talking. If you have any thoughts on the topics, any of them that we've discussed today, we're definitely keen to hear them. We'd like this to be a conversation. Leave a comment on the YouTube page or on our website for this podcast. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you taking your time to listen to us share our passion for Star Wars. Stay tuned to our website, swnz.co.nz, for Star Wars news for New Zealanders and another podcast episode next week and every Friday. Don't forget, you can jump on over to either our Facebook group or the SWNZ message boards to discuss all the latest Star Wars news with other Kiwi fans. Kia ora, kia noho, haumaru. Thank you for listening and stay safe.
Tūro Hawaiki. May the Force be with you.